Hello and welcome to the live stream live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and I hope you're doing so well on this wonderful Tuesday evening or daytime or whatever time it is when you are watching or listening on the podcast or watching live. Hi, how are you? Welcome to the live stream live once again. As usual, we are brought to you by, Lucas Roasting Company. They are a wonderful indie small batch coffee roasting company located in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. I know them very well. I've been buying coffee from them for literally years, and they are my proud partner on the show. And I have a wonderful promo code, the Livestream Live, which gives you 15% off your first internet order. If you're interested in the coffee, if you are watching on YouTube or Facebook Live, there is a link underneath the video. If you are watching on Instagram and on TikTok, which is the newest platform, there is a link in my bio. That is Lucas Roasting Company. They're an amazing company and their coffee is incredible. All right, we have a really cool show for you tonight. I am talking to the head of actors and dancers at the Metropolitan Opera, Jillian Smith. As probably most of you know, I have been working at the Metropolitan Opera for a bit over a decade now. It was my first professional big thing when I got out of school, and they've been hiring me ever since, which has been really, really great. So I'm happy to work there so much. You'll meet her soon, and we'll talk all about what that's like, because it's a lot. It's a it might be one of the hardest jobs in the live theater world in New York. So what have I been watching? What I've been doing? How am I feeling? So let's start with how I've been feeling. I'm sure if you're watching me, you're feeling a lot the same way that I am. It feels like there's something new and ridiculous and psychotic happening every day politically coming out of the news cycle, whether Elon Musk is firing everybody or not firing everybody because he can. It's like him and his army of like child interns that are just kind of like looking at everybody's social security numbers and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, members of the LGBTQIA plus community are being ostracized and erased and made to feel small, or, you know, something like that. Or today we get the tariffs coming down, and then the counter tariffs and the trade wars and blah, blah, blah. And it feels like I'm in a bad science fiction film all the time, like a dystopian science fiction madness scape. And if you feel that way, I just want to say that I fucking understand and I hear you, and I do genuinely think that it's going to be okay if we stick together, if we bother the shit out of our representation, if we write, call, email, show up, protest when we can, things of that nature, just to let the people that make the decisions know that, you know, this shit isn't going to fly. Immigration also, like, it's just, it's everything. Schools, you know, USAID, like, everything is all bingle-bopped. So we just got to tell people that we want all this shit back and that we don't want things getting exploded and taken away, like our social security benefits and Medicaid. It's like, it's literally everything is everything. It's wild, but it'll be okay. We just got to stick together and band together. And I don't know what other analogies I can use for us sticking together. What have I been watching? So I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, and I watch wrestling a lot. I've gotten back into the WWE a lot, probably since last run up to WrestleMania. So if you have been watching WWE and you saw the Elimination Chamber this weekend, you saw John Cena turn heel for the first time in 22 years. And it was, for me, one of the most incredible moments I've ever seen, in like that specific new nuance of like a wrestling thing. I don't think anything has shocked people like that since Hulk Hogan healed up when he became Hollywood Hulk. But last night was Saturday was specifically just like awesome. Like the WWE has come a long way, and with Vince gone and Triple H taking over creative and all that stuff and being bought by TKO, I feel like we're back in like a golden age of wrestling, both in athleticism and in storytelling. Even though it's not like nuanced storytelling, it's very basic soap opera screaming, but it's a lot of fucking fun, and I love it, and I watch it all the time. And I'm also watching Tournament of Champions, which is the cooking show that's like a bracket like the basketball, but it's cooking, and it's hosted by Guy Fieri. That's a lot of fun. If you haven't seen that, it's in season 6. And if you're into cooking shows and you're also into like intense sweaty competition, it has it all. It has both of those things, and you will love it. And as for scripted, I'm watching Foundation, which I touched on last week, and I know I'm late to this party, but there's a lot of content. And like I've said before, Apple Plus hides all their shit from everybody. I'm not going to do that. I have a movie coming out on Apple Plus March 21st. It is called Doctor, and it's a comedy, and I'm in it, and the trailer's out now. I'm in it twice. You can see me in it twice, and then you can see me in the movie. It's got Damian Young in it and Stephen he's like an influencer, because that's what they're doing now. But he's got I think it's like 4 million or whatever it is combined, like just on Instagram he's got 4 million followers, and then he's got a lot of people, so I'm sure it'll do very, very well. And it's also very funny. It's about it's about a group of hypochondriacs that get moved to a small town by this predatory doctor played by Damian Young, and because he wants to make money without actually practicing any medicine. And then he gets called because there was a bank robbery in town, and then Stephen He's character is there, and then the bank robbers come to the clinic because they got one of them got shot, and then he pretends to be the doctor. So haha, comedy ensues, chaos ensues, and I'm a cop in this that does a bunch of inquiry and is kind of like not buffoonish, but a bit over the top, and then I get shot, but in a comedic way. I don't die. Spoiler alert: I don't die when I get shot. But and then things are going well with my family. My youngest now is just over a month old. She's about five weeks old. It's a new adventure all the time. Having two kids is certainly interesting. I've spoken about it before. It's not having the two, it's the emotional strain that it's taken on my oldest that has been the hardest part. People say going from one to two is like the impossible task. The doing of it is not what's hard. It's the emotional navigation, the like new issues that arise. That's the hard part, because as a parent, you don't want to see your kids in any sort of pain or any sort of distress. And sometimes my oldest, she is in a ton of distress and a ton of emotional pain, and she can't articulate it because she doesn't have that capability yet. She's 3 and a half. She can do it a little bit, but she's not like, I feel this way because I have a younger sister and I'm having abandonment issues. You know, like she's just like, I'm sad and I'm going to throw all of your books in the toilet. And then you have to be like, we don't throw books in the toilet. That's bad. I understand you're having big feelings, instead of picking her up and shaking her until her head falls off. So that's like a new thing, one that I'm happy to navigate, but also one that's like its own madness. But that's just all part of it, I guess. And it's no one tells you that. No one preps you for it. That might be the hardest part, really, is that no matter what anyone says to you, excuse me, no matter what advice they can give you, nothing can prepare you for anything. It's the ultimate kind of like you're just in the moment rolling with everything, and you're loving it and you're hating parts of it. And you're trying to get through it with your partner if you have one with you. It's just a roller coaster. It's its own magic hell ride. I don't know how else to describe that, but that's kind of what it is. So yeah, that's everything that I've been like feeling, watching, and living with for the moment. I'm sure there'll be more things next week. So we are live on 4 platforms. If you comment, I will see it. If you have questions, I will answer them. Or if you have any questions or comments for Jillian, she will answer them as long as they're not super weird, hypersexual, or wildly inappropriate. I will ask them. Now that that's over it, I'm about to bring on Jillian Smith. She is, one of the coolest people that I have ever had the opportunity to know. I knew her before she got elevated to this position, when she was an administrator at the Metropolitan Opera. She was still working very much in the way that she is now. And we'll talk about this, but I mean, she went about implementing a lot of really cool changes to the department and to how things are run. And I remember her talking about them when we first met, and then to be there for these changes is really special to see. And she says it all with honesty and heart and a lot of creativity. And I'm just so honored that she would come on the show. And without further ado, here is Jillian Smith. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
How nice.
Yes. Well, it's true. You're hired. Dude. I'm hired. I'm gonna get hired again. it's true. And that's what people they don't expect when they come on my show, is that I just kind of like hit them with lots of positivity. But it's all true shit. Like, yeah, it's good.
Thanks. Charmed, I'm sure.
So you are the head of actors and dancers at the Metropolitan Opera.
Yes.
So you oversee basically all the professional actors, like sword fighters, jugglers, acrobats, yes. And all
small
that.
And speaking roles, dance. Yeah, basically anything that's not full singing or like orchestra falls under my department. So it's a lot of moving pieces all the time. Yeah. But
And was arts administration a thing that you always were like, I want to do that, or did you just kind of like, or did it happen upon you?
Well, I think that when I was in college, like I always loved performing and, you know, being a part of the arts, I respect the hustle so much of the people who come to the city and do the thing and like stomp the pavement and everything like that. That kind of life wasn't for me. Anxiety and everything. I was like, you know what? That is no. So I kind of started figuring that out in college, and I, you know, tried to get some internships here and there in arts administration because I was like, how do I stay in the arts, but you know, not do the performing side of it professionally. So, you know, and I think supporting artists is so fantastic and important. So I really just started exploring that avenue, and through a series of lucky timing and, you know, all of that, it just kind of all fell into place, which I'm still always pinching myself.
I mean, yeah, it's cool. I mean, like I always tell people that you have one of the hardest jobs that I've seen. Like you and Jordan and Noah, who are the other two people that work under Jillian. Yeah. you have to keep track of and organize and pay and schedule thousands of people a season. And for those of you that don't know, the Met Opera runs in reps. So there is usually 3 to 4 shows going at the same time, while there are other shows in rehearsal, usually 2 to 3 that are also in rehearsal. So how the fuck do you keep track of everything?
I don't know. There are some times where, not to mention that depending on each season, people can be in the same shows all at the same time.
Right.
So it's working, you know, with directors and recasting and everything. I think it just happens. I have such a great team and we spend the time to do the work ahead of, you know, we really plan and prepare so that even months and months out, we're looking at the casting for the crunchy times where there's so many overlaps. So we really just, you know, put in that level of work because it really has to happen and it saves us. It saves the directors, you know, the actors. I think it takes the stress off of everybody when you kind of, you know, figure out it's a big puzzle, basically.
Sure. Where,
you know, and, you know, you're working with actors and dancers and people who, again, like the hustle is real. They're working. They have other jobs. Like we're not paying 100% of anyone's bills most of the time. So we have to also allow for them to live their lives and have other stuff. So, which is part of, you know, the ever moving and shifting thing.
Right. Yeah. Which is true. Like the Opera House is really awesome about all of us auditioning and booking TV shows and things of that nature, or like a commercial or like a film. And I mean, there's understudies for every part and blah, blah, blah. So it's a real, like, you know, it's one of the hardest gigs, honestly. I think it's one of the hardest gigs in the city just because, I mean, especially when you're in multiple shows at the same time.
Yeah.
Because what's cool is that, you know, if you've been working there for a bit and then you've been in a show, you guys offer the same cast the same show again, usually. Depending on like skill level and things of that nature. If you can't like pick up stuff anymore, then you're not going to be able to do the show. So there are times where you can be in 2 shows at night and you're rehearsing a show during the day.
Yeah.
So it gets really, really hairy.
Yeah. We have people like right now, some of them are quadruple booked. I mean, it's just really how each season happens. And we try to keep people in their same things if we can. But as you've experienced, I'm sure sometimes it's not possible, especially with new productions. I mean, it's just every year it's something different. And, you know, again, I'm so lucky to have such an amazing team. Also, Michael and Linda, who are the dance co-directors, who, you know, are doing the dance. They not only are helping to cast and schedule and all of that, they're also the choreographers, basically. So they're like resetting everything. So it's kind of, it's its own kind of little theater department within the Met. You know, it's,
right.
Full service, you know, and we try to, there's so many different individuals. When you're working with hundreds of people, you have to make sure you're taking care of each and every one of them individually. And, you know, I want everyone to have a great experience at the Met, because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. I think that that's like the important thing when you're in arts admin, especially if you can, to like make people feel comfortable and seen and supported.
Oh, sure. And what's cool about it is because it is opera and because it's such like a grand scope of things, is that it's one of the last places that you can use all of your acting training. So like it's one of the few places, like I got hired because I knew how to sword fight well.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few places left where you can make a pretty good wage doing a sword fight. And that it happens often.
Yeah, the fight elements are always exciting. I mean, you really are calling on people who have trained in all these different ways. I mean, you know, when we do some shows where we had all of the freak show performers from Coney Island.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, like that audition process was so fun. You're like sitting in a room watching people hammer things into their face. And, you know, I think I've told you this story about the guy who like picked up a chair with a hook in his eye socket. Yeah. And it was beautiful. We're like weeping, you know, it's like gorgeous art. And it's like, you know, a hook in someone's eye. But you have these surreal moments of just like, these are your skills. And I love that the opera, it's grand theater, and that it can call upon all of these little things. And then, you know, we get people in like you with swords and stuff like for these things. And we try to hang on and have you do other stuff as best we can. Yeah.
Well, so it's interesting. So I know for me, and I don't know if it was the same way for you, but I had never seen an opera until I was cast in an opera. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, like, yeah. I was like, this is insane to me. I don't really understand what's going on. And now 10 years later, I'm like, opera's fucking awesome. Like it's huge and epic and takes you on such a journey every single time. And before you started working there, had you seen much opera?
I hadn't seen a ton. My dad has been a patron at the Met. He was for years. And so I actually saw my first opera when I was 10-ish, which was La Troyenne. And it's, you know, like 6 hours about the Trojan War. And
just a really
starter opera.
You're just in that show. You're like, whoa.
Yeah. But, you know, not the best introduction, but there was still something exciting about it. You know, there was still, I remember this scene, everyone's like fighting and killing each other. And, you know, so it still, even at that time, was exciting to just experience something again, like on this grand scale. I hadn't, you know, like opera was not really a big part of my life until I started, but now I can't imagine. I mean, it's just amazing to me watching, you know, you're in these small rehearsal rooms sometimes with these singers who are doing, it's like this, you know, athleticism kind of. You know, having a bad morning and then you're sitting in the room and the like chorus is just singing full force, gorgeous music, like 5 feet from you. You're like, oh, okay.
Oh, thank you, Billy Shaw. We love you too.
Billy Shaw.
Thank you.
He was my date last night at the Moby Dick premiere.
Oh yeah. So Moby Dick premiered last night at the Metropolitan Opera. It's a new show, right?
It's new to the Met. It's been done at a few other opera houses, but.
And it's a cool, like, swashbuckling, people climbing everywhere, like, tons of people on stage, great music, great performers. Go see it. Go see Moby Dick.
It's a good time. It's not too long. People always ask me, like, how long is this one? This one's only, you know, 3 hours, so it's not, the story.
Yeah, it's Moby Dick, you know.
It's Moby Dick.
You know, and it's, you know, I feel like Moby Dick is the perfect story for an opera because it ends all sad. And it's like, that's how operas are.
It hits, does everybody die? Yeah, basically. Is there, you know.
Is there a person in it with horrible PTSD? Yes.
Exactly.
Is everybody punching each other in the head? Yes.
Yes. A woman doesn't die. So I guess that's the only kind of difference. You know, opera loves to kill off some women, but
to punish the women.
Yeah. Like, don't fall in love in an opera. All right. So
No.
But yeah, so I think that opera has just become more and more of, you know, my life. Obviously, I've been there since 2007, which is wild.
Wow.
But
that's a long time.
It is a long time. I mean, I started with the children's chorus in like 2004 and then did some things here and there, but full since 2007. So it's it's exciting. It's always something new and different, and watching people do their best. And like, you know, we have some of the best performers in the entire world. And that includes the actors and the dancers. Like everybody just, you know, shows up and does their thing. And it's like an honor to be a part of it in whatever way.
That's good. I like that. That's nice.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really loved is how you have been so involved in changing things at the Opera House, both like socially and changing the composition of the people that are cast and that are brought in. You've been extremely vocal about it for years and years and years. And I know that you're probably not the only person, but you're the person that I have the most interaction with. But it's just cool as a person who has worked there and has seen the shifts, the drastic changes just in who is there, what they look like, what their skin color is, what their orientations are.
Yeah.
It has changed dramatically. And also we used to be called supernumeraries, mm-hmm. which translates to like not needed or extra or useless.
Yeah.
And we're not. And you fought to get our title changed to actor because that's what we are.
You know, that had been in the works for a while. Shout out to Joe Barnes, who is now the company manager, who really helped spearhead that. You know, he was running their department before me. And I think that we both noticed that more and more when we have all these new theater directors coming over from Europe and other places, and they really, the way that they want to work with the actors is very different. They expect this level of talent, and you know, it's so much more. I'm not saying there still isn't, hey, can you like go carry this spear across the stage, right? Right, I mean, that right. still happens, but that's like the true super nature. But you know, we shifted, and you know, even that, we have actors doing, you know, it's really helped. I think people feel respected. I think it's hopefully, I mean, you could tell me better that it's kind of changed the vibe a little, you know, as much as it can.
It's changed the vibe incredibly for the better, I would say. Especially with like the non-white folks that have been there for as long as I have,
yeah.
whose opportunities have done who have increased by like 500%. And that is largely because of the changes that were put into place, and it's great, you know. Like I mean, like I remember when I was in a production of Othello there, where the like big thing was that we're finally not doing blackface, and that was in like 2010 or something, or two. No, that was in like 2000.
I can't remember the exact year, but yeah, like you know, people can use their imagination and understand the otherness of that story without going there. Right. So yeah, I you know, part of the Met's effort at DEI, I took it very seriously. I think there's all kinds of ways to change what people are seeing. It means a lot to show people themselves on stage, I guess, if that makes sense. You know, we can have anyone doing anything. We can, it's theater, right? It can be anything. So yeah, I try to challenge people. I'm like, can this be this? Are we being historically accurate here? Could this be a woman? Could this be a person of color? Like what, like why, what's really, I understand like certain historical, you know, maybe if someone's trying to really be realistic and that sort of thing. But I really want people to tell me why or why not, because want to challenge it. And I want to make sure that we're representing everybody as best we can. I think that one of the things that I tried to do when I took over the dance department right after we reopened after the pandemic. And I remember asking Linda Gelinas, who's one of the dance co-directors, who was a dancer at the Met, like she, you know, And I was like, why aren't we doing open auditions anymore? Every time we have an audition, it's either AGMA, Equity, or in-house, which is fantastic, you know, but you're taking away the opportunity from all sorts of other people. And if we're trying to find new people and new talent, we should be really opening up to everyone.
Yeah,
and there was no good reason. So we reinstituted that like almost, I think maybe my first season even. And we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dancers. Like in one day before we started pre-registration, we learned something new every year, but we saw like almost 800 women in one day.
Holy shit.
And you know, Linda and Michael Tresnovec, the other dance co-director, they're like teaching the routines to like so many groups every day. And you know, so kudos to them. But it really, out of maybe we saw 1,000 people, but even if you find a handful new graduates, people who aren't, you know, part of a union yet, you're giving them that opportunity, and it helped like reshape some of what the landscape of the dance department even looked like. We have so many, and you know, to work at the Met, you have to join, if you're a dancer, you have to join AGMA. So then you're giving people an opportunity to join the union. Like it's all important to see, you know, anyone who wants to be seen. Like we've taken that and tried to make that the reality. I mean, if you want to, you know, come and audition, like we want to see you.
That's great.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm doing the best that, you know, I can to make sure, we take it seriously that we want to be inclusive as much as possible.
Well, that's good, because there are a lot of places that are not doing that now because they don't have to anymore, quote unquote. So it's good to see. I mean, like, I didn't expect it to be any other way. I mean, like, you know, there's the Ukrainian flag colors are on the opera house constantly, and you do the national anthem before.
Well, I was saying just last night, Moby Dick opening, we started with the Ukrainian national anthem, and it was
so it's no surprise to me that, you know, it wouldn't stop. I mean, it's not going to stop in New York theater. Like, it's like, why would it stop? It makes no sense.
My watch. Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, exactly.
What's the point? There's no point in it. Like, it's made everything better. It makes everything more enriched and real. Yeah.
Yes. I think that wherever you can, you need to be pushing that envelope. You know, it means something to people to give them those opportunities. And again, like, we're in theater, right? We're in the performing arts. It doesn't have to be so, not to say it's not serious, but it doesn't have to be so, you know, like.
Well, I mean, also, like, it's the reason that people joined the performing arts, so they didn't feel so alone and so other anymore.
Yeah.
So why the hell, you know, like, if it's happening to you there, then just, I don't know. It makes no sense.
Yeah. No, it's fucking insane. And I think that however I can help with that, I try. You know, it's not perfect yet, but I think that the management at the Met really has, you know, we have the right people in place who are trying to really make things, like, I keep using the word inclusive, you know, it's like the buzzword, but you know, I think that the idea is we want to see all shapes and sizes. We want to see everybody who has passion for performing. That's really what it's about. You know, we want the best people on that stage, but also people who love it. I would never want to take that from somebody. You know, we try to just make sure that, that there's a place for everyone, you know, and we try to find it.
Well, good. And I'm happy that that's going to continue. Hooray. So we've talked about this before, and I totally agree that there's a specific type of acting performance that has to take place on the opera house stage. Mm-hmm. And under, like, certain circumstances, you can come front and center, but what type of performance are you looking for when you audition people or things of that nature?
We're looking for basically the opposite of what everybody's taught in theater school, in a sense. You know, it's people who can disappear into the background, but yet still make interesting choices and make the world and the scene alive without calling too much attention. So it's people who can blend in and find moments, but they know that it's not about them. Sometimes it is, like, you know, you have your moments and you have your featured things, but it's the most successful actors are those who know no one to hold them and no one to fold them. But it's really just, you know, to quote the great Kenny Rogers. Yeah. You know, you have to know when to pick your moments. You can never, it's an opera house, right? It's about the singers, it's about the music. Yeah. And sometimes it's about the actors, but it's very different than I'm going to do a monologue now, you know, when you're in theater school. So I love to watch the choices people make because it's really just a different vibe than I think a lot of people are used to. And you watch people kind of settle into it, you know, over time. Because like if you're just fresh out of college, you know, it's not something you're used to. And we give a lot of people who come to the city to act, I've given them their first jobs, you know, in theater. And so.
Well, it's interesting because like you, like as a performer, you know, like when I'm doing this medium, this is how I have to be. Or so for opera acting is very different. It certainly is. And that's the thing that I had to adjust to pretty hard. I crank the lever down because I wasn't good at that at first. I love it because the way that I look at it is that like you're constantly immersed in a world and you have to be totally fucking committed to it with all the other people on stage, and you're living sometimes in these moments for like 30 minutes straight where you're doing something in like a town with people, and it's like you and the chorus and all the other actors and opera singers that like aren't currently singing. You're creating this atmosphere in this world.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, like, you know, like the Pagliacci that I'm in, there's literally like a fucking town on stage with like an ice cream shop and a bar and like people are actually pouring drinks and they're actually eating ice cream and they're all doing all this shit. And it's like, you have to be 100% committed to it. Like, and while that's going on over here, people are over here getting like proposed to, there's like a bar fight happening. Like it's a whole orchestrated thing around the story of the opera.
Right. And just because you're not the central action doesn't mean people aren't watching you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've heard about opera, but sometimes an aria goes on for a minute or two.
Sometimes watch the singers. It gets repeated. Yeah.
Yes. But then you start looking at what everyone else is doing and you're really like coloring the world and like making, you know, so just because it's not the main thing, and that's the thing, you have to stay engaged in a way that is really, again, like different than a lot of things that you're taught.
It's harder. It's harder. Yeah. Because you have to be, because you're still hyper in, because you can tell, like, if there's a person that's just standing there, you're like, that bitch is just standing there.
Yeah.
And they're pulling focus in that way.
Yeah. If you have like dead eyes or something, you're
like, what's that person doing? What the fuck's wrong with them? You know, like, so it's an interesting balance, you know? I got into like an argument with a person. I mean, I get into arguments about art all the time. It's a thing that happens there. Yeah, but they were trying to talk about how like working at the Met Opera is like being a background in like a TV show or a movie. And I was like, it's nothing like that. You're not a background. you're not just like walking through the scene, you're actively in the scene. You're acting. Yes.
You're creating the scene. Yeah. You're working.
And you get to practice. You get to practice at the same time. You get to practice your little tiny, like, I use it to like practice my like TV and film shit that I need to work on because the house is so big that I can practice stuff. Like if I'm in the shadows and it's like a really like intense emotional scene, I'll practice my crying because no one's seeing me, but I can still be in the moment and I can like lend my like energy to the scene. So, you know, people can feel that shitty even if they can't see it. And it helps me with the rest of my work. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, then we have the HD broadcast and sometimes they might see it. So
exactly.
You have to stay engaged. And even in the moments where I can understand, like, listen, I couldn't do some of what we asked the actors to do. Like there are scenes, you did our old Aida, some of the scenes in the new Aida, like you are going to stand there and hold a prop for 30 minutes. Yeah. Maybe you won't, you know, and I can understand it is hard to stay engaged that whole time. Right. And so I'm a fidgety person. I don't think I could do it, but I always am in awe of everyone who can even find a way to keep it interesting and engaged in like basically total stillness. You know, it really is its own set of skills.
It is.
Like a meditative,
And it's really applicable, and I swear it is, to other parts of the like acting sphere. And it's really important. And the people that I've seen like actively practice there do really well in the other parts of it too. So it's great. And it's also just a shitload of fun. Like the whole ensemble cast, it has kind of like gone away. And it's one of the last few places where it's like you and a bunch of people that are in it together. It's long, long hours. A lot of the time, like especially when you're like making a new show or you're putting like an older show that like hasn't happened in a while back up on its feet. Mm-hmm. And we get relied on a lot to be the most consistent so that they don't have to worry about us anymore. So we get to the point where we feel like we've been in rehearsal for our entire life, but we are needed as like anchor points in the rehearsal room so that they can work with the opera singers and they know that like we'll be there for the opera singers and stuff like that. So it's incredible trust and it feels really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I feel fortunate all the time. The Met in general, but also our department is, the community is so fantastic. It's like a family. I think everybody, you know, you really have to trust each other. There's, you know, sometimes we're seeing each other for like 15 hours a day. I don't know that I'm exaggerating.
No, you're not.
I mean, it's really, you rely on people, you know, there's a lot you're carrying, you're like sometimes lifting singers and you're doing things that you have to have this like real trust in each other. And, you know, the Met can be fast and furious sometimes. And I think that, the actors are really the glue that holds so much of it together because of, it's like, you know what you're doing, right? Because we have to plug in the singer who just flew in.
Well, that's like a very real thing. Like an opera singer will either not have the time or just won't come because they don't want to, which is a very real thing. So they are like, they're just like, okay, it's time to plug in whoever it is.
Yeah.
We have 3 days left for this, even though we've been rehearsing it for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So we need to get this person up to speed, and it happens and we do it. And,
No,
I feel like you have to be a very intelligent person to do this work.
Yeah. that's why I love some of our bigger shows, like when we do a new AIDA or something where we have to hold these auditions for like, you know, 200 people or something, because through that process, we get new people and we find out who's the A team, right? Like who's really on it and who can we then bring in to do more things. And, you know, it really, because it takes a, like we've been saying, like a really certain type of actor, like someone who, yeah, like the focus, like you have to be smart. I mean, you have to know exactly what's coming next and pre-think. I mean, there's so many things happening backstage, and if you're in the wrong space or you're, it can really be a disaster.
Yeah, so, exactly. People that have never been in, like, in the wings of the Metropolitan Opera, it is one of the biggest spaces I have ever seen. Like the wings and the backstage area are holding on to other sets for the other shows that are in rep that are about to get put on stage. And there's also just like a team of stagehands and prop people and actors and dancers and singers and stage crew and stage managers. There's like three or four a show. Like it's a madhouse back there.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
And if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're going to get yelled at and you cannot take it personally. Like, you know, if or standing, you could be hit by a prop that's
You could get hit by a set.
Yes. Yeah. The only time I ever got yelled at, I was like, oh, but it was because I was about to get murdered by a set piece, you know, and the stage manager wanted to not have that happen. So there's so much happening.
It is. I mean, but it's just, but that's like, it's like show business on such a scale that we don't see anymore. You know, like it truly is like it's like an older school house where there's like, it's cool in a sense, because it's like, you don't see that shit anymore. You don't see epic sets. You don't see 100 people on stage at the same time, like you do in Bohème or AIDA or Turandot or one of these epic shows. Like in Turandot, there's like 300 people on stage, right?
Something like that, you know.
But you don't see that anymore. Like movies used to be made that way, where like they're like 600 extras to like make a battle scene, you know. It's the last
fantastic.
And it's the last bastion of epicness, I would say.
I think you're right. And I think that, you know, the fact that people are used to coming in and doing a show and you have the theater for as long as you're rehearsing and you don't have to change a set over, you know, at the Met, you're on stage for the day and then you have to be done when you're done, because we're then doing a completely new show at night and you have to have that turnover. And then the next morning, something else could be on stage. And then the next night, you know, so it's this idea that, you know, when directors who aren't used to that come to the Met, I think it's like a surprise to them sometimes as well, because it's really just it, you know, the turnover is insane sometimes.
Well, I mean, we do get a lot of like time in the room, but time on stage is it's very precious. So depending on the show, and this might shock people, you know, we might get 2 weeks max on stage, depending on the show. Like if it's hyper technical, like when we did Lucia, we had like a month on stage, which is unheard of there. But it's usually like 2 weeks. And also like if it's a rake, if it's a moving stage, if it spins, if it's in the round, you know, like you don't really know what's happening until you get on stage. I mean, they can approximate it pretty well in the room, but it's nothing like being on stage. Like it's a whole animal in its own, it's a beast. And being able to navigate that quickly is really important, because you can, like, especially if you're doing like a fight, you can get really hurt.
Yes. Especially if it's like, this is going to be on a turntable. We can't replicate that in the room, but kind of this is what it's going to be like.
Right.
And that's back to the point of, we just need really smart, good people who are you know, focus and want to, you know, like, we can have people be absent. We love to be like, oh, you booked a movie, yay, or, you know, you have an audition for something. But then there are the, you know, those shows where if you miss, it can actually be dangerous, depending on what, you know.
Yeah,
what.
I've been in a couple of those, and
yeah.
I got like COVID for two of them, and it was like, oh, fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And it just gets a little, like, oh man, like I remember like any of those kind of shows that I'm not able to be there for, I'm like always like asking people like, is everybody okay? Did anybody hurt? You know, like, because it's wild.
Yeah. Oh God, those COVID days were insane. We had, you know,
COVID, like, years. Yeah.
Yeah. Eight different casts of something. I mean,
yeah, it was crazy. Like, you guys, what were you hiring, like 10 understudies a show or some shit like that?
No, we just worked with the directors and had different staging plans, kind of. So it's like, okay, what can be omitted? If this person's out, these people, I mean, you remember Rigoletto opening, all of that.
Yeah, everyone had COVID.
And I think that we brought you in. Like,
you did, yeah. Yeah, so, like, I had never done it, and yeah. it was like 4 days before the show opened or whatever, and then you were like, "So listen, everyone in the cast has COVID. Do you think you could learn all this stuff in 2 days?" Yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, fine."
All right, but yeah, so we did bring in a few extra people. But as you experienced, it was like, okay, here's fight choreography A. And then if this person's out, we go to B. And then if three people are out, this is, I mean, it's just, it was
there was plans after plans after plans. Yeah, yes. There was a show where there was a person that was on book, and then to do the physicality, it was a dancer, right?
It was Linda.
Mm.
It was Linda, our dance co-director. She had to go on. It was our Cinderella production, and she went on as a stepsister, and she learned it that day, that morning, all day she spent. And then the singer sang from the wings, and it was like the singer's debut, I think, of the Met of that role, and Linda killed it. And I mean, I got a ticket immediately when I heard that was happening. I was like, I have to see this. And it was one of the best. Yeah. Those are the moments, but you know, again, it takes a village. It really, it's live theater. It's excitement, you know? It's,
you never know what's going to happen. It's crazy.
That's what happened.
You never know. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
So you do, I'm going to changing gears. So every year you do a production of Charlie Brown during the Christmas season, right?
Yes.
And you play...
I play Lucy. We have been doing this since 2009.
And it's an official show, right? Like, you have the rights to it and stuff, things of that nature?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there was some... When we first started, the rights didn't exist, and then they were created, and then we have, you know, so, yeah, it's been a fluid thing, but it's always been on the up and up. So we... we had a few hiccups here and there, but we're back. You know, we took like 2 years off. I won't bore everyone with those details, but we are now like officially back with the rights and everything. And you know, we sell out every show, the money goes to charity. It's this tradition that's so wonderful and beautiful. Like this past year, you know, being back, we really, you watch families grow up. We've been doing it for so long that people are like, hey, my kid's in college and they've been coming every year. I mean, it's really so wonderful to share that with, you know, it's like such a specific thing, and it at least gives me an opportunity to perform and, you know, involved in a way. Cause I do miss that, but it's, so, you know, once a year I get to do my thing here. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, you like haven't truly left it behind, which is really cool that you're still making live theater of your own, which is cool.
Yeah. I, you know, hopefully I'm always like, when I have more time, but I always have friends. We, you know, dream things up and want to collaborate and do productions. And
yeah, I mean, you worked with me on my TV show for and an entire summer, and it was awesome.
It was so fun. Yeah.
Yeah, my show After Everyone, Chillian was basically an administrative role on the show, and she did a great fucking job. She was great at it. So, yeah.
Yeah, helping to keep it in line.
Helping to keep everything on track, and it was hard at times.
That was a wild ride, I guess that's the thing. I love being involved, you know, in the arts, however I can. If I'm performing, if I'm behind the scenes, if I'm, you know, I've done freelance casting for certain shows, you know, for the Philharmonic and for the Armory. And I think that it, you know, it's good for my soul to just, even my day-to-day helping people out and making sure, you know, the arts has been so important to me my entire life. And the fact that I get to do that as my career is fantastic.
It's important work too, because artists need advocates, and mm-hmm. they need advocates that are them and that understand mm-hmm. that world and what it's like. And you truly are like that. Like, I know that you're probably torn, but between trying to do what the opera house wants and like what the department wants and like what the actors and everybody wants. And it's a whole tug of war, blah, 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 the horrible bullshit thing. Yeah. But I do know at the end of the day that you really do just want to do the best that you possibly can. And that's because you feel, because you are one of us, and not being a like professional artist or a professional actor doesn't mean that you aren't a professional artist or a professional actor.
I think you're, I mean, everyone needs an advocate, and if I can make a difference in a performer's life in whatever way I can, I will do my best. I think that overseeing so many, you know, especially freelance artists, I mean, they're really, this is their lives. It's so meaningful to them. And I want to make sure that, you know, they know that they're taken care of and that there's somebody on their side. The Met is a huge machine sometimes, and it can be a place you can feel lost. And, you know, I think that there's so many moving pieces. So I try to, you know, along with my team, just be a place where you know that you can. Have a home.
Yeah,
that's
really good. Yeah, you got to have fun in there. You got to have fun times. Yeah. We just got a comment that said artists do need advocates. It's amazing to see you guys help each other shine. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's really what it's about. And, you know, you have to keep supporting people. I love when someone tells me they can't do a show because they got another opportunity and it's going to take them away. You know, there's always a place for them to come back to also. Like, we have people leave for Broadway or to do a movie or something, and it's like, come back to the Met whenever you can. You know, we're here.
Well, that was the thing. Like, that was my personal story, was that the Opera House allowed me to pursue my career in a more meaningful way. It let me quit my survival jobs, because I had four of them. Yeah. Like I remember I like booked a show that paid really well at the Opera House, like really well. And it allowed me to get to where I am now. Honestly, like it gave me time, which is one of the most important things. And it gave me, hold on. It's the TikToks make me do a puzzle because it thinks I'm not actually live. I'm here. All right. Thank you. Thanks, TikTok, for making me do a puzzle.
Probably wasn't too hard. Yeah.
No, you just had to match the puzzle piece up. Loser, TikTok. But and then it also allowed me to take more classes, to do more networking, to meet more people, because I was already in the city full time. So I just used the time after or in between to do more stuff. Also, because I was working at a bagel store, I didn't have to work at a bagel store anymore, and I wasn't fucking exhausted all the time. So, like, it was great. And then, you know, I kept auditioning, and you kept hiring me, so I didn't have to, like, the Met became part of my survival money job life, and it's been great. It's been really awesome, and I'm, like, I tell people all the time that, like, even if I become, like a Tom Hanks or a Tom Cruise or whatever, I'm still gonna find a time to do like an opera a season, just because like it's fun and it's like it's where I got to where I am is because of the Opera House. So, you know, like I'll come back forever.
Yay. Yeah. I mean, that's what I love to hear. So that's what it's all about, is again giving people that space.
Who is this? I love you.
That's Miss G Maria. She was my drama teacher in high school, and I did musicals with her in high school. We won some competitions. I did some musicals once I was in college. I would go back for the summers. So very near and dear.
Well, thanks for watching, and thank you for your comment. I'm happy that we're both doing great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you're having a nice time. So we're over an hour.
Oh.
Yeah, time really flies when you're having fun.
Wrap it up.
So I ask everybody this. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years? Do you still see yourself working at the Opera House, or is there like a grander plan that you have for yourself?
I don't know, which is the worst answer.
No, it's like, fine.
Because I have loved my trajectory. I have enjoyed, you know, moving up and around at the Met. I really am happy in the position I'm in. You know, so I think it suits me well and gives me the freedom to do a lot of other things that I love. And yeah, I don't know. If this is still happening and it's still great, I will, you know, I don't have like an exit plan you know, it's such a, again, it really is about the people I work with. I have amazing colleagues, and I'm happy most day, you know, we have stressful moments, but for the most part, you know, I really do enjoy my job.
Well, I mean, look, that's not a bad answer.
Like, yeah.
You know, like, I know that, you know, people are like, well, what are you doing to move forward, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, sometimes it's like, I found this thing that I'm in love with, and I'm going to improve it with me and everything around me. And I mean, you've already been doing that, so. And if it's what you love, then it's what you love. And you are very good at it. So,
well, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah,
so for now, you know, I'll stay.
Okay. Well, that's good news, because I think you should.
Well, all right.
Well, thank you so much for being here. You've been awesome. And I'll talk to you so soon. Okay?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for being on. Goodbye, Jillian. Thank you so much. Bye. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much for being here tonight. This has been the live stream live. If you are watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're watching on Instagram, please, I don't know, what you like, comment, say nice stuff. If you're watching on TikTok, I'm still new here, everybody. You can share this, give me a flower, I don't know what it is. Thanks for watching. And if you're watching on the Facebook, please share, please comment, please like it, please watch it, please be a friend of the show. And finally, we are going to show you once again Lucas Roasting Company. They are my show sponsor. They're a lovely group of people, a wonderful family, and they literally are just, it's one dude in like a small business front, roasting coffee every day. That is truly incredible. You get 15% off your first internet order with the code the live stream live. The link is literally everywhere in my bios under videos. And that's it. Thank you and good night. And I will see you next week.